Well, the world is dumpster fire, and nothing here makes sense. And you pass it live between crippling fear and constant self-defense. And nothing's right and nothing's good, and you're paralyzed with grief. Don't kill yourself, just have a cup of coffee.
Welcome to Coffee Over Suicide, the dramedy podcast about mental illness and choosing life over death one cup of coffee at a time. I'm your host, Chris Parker Howard. And today on the show, it is a big one. It is episode number 95. It is the last episode before September and the last episode before my birthday. Now, today's guest would have been fantastic to put out as next week. But I love the number 95 because it tells us that we are just 5 episodes away from 100. And it seemed like a milestone. So I wanted to give it to today's guest, Bullseye the Anti-Bullying Clown. Bullseye is a very interesting character, and we did talk in character. You'll hear it in the podcast. It's kind of a strange thing because you can't see it, and yet I think you can picture it when you hear his voice. Also, with the artwork that I've put together for the flyer for the show, you should be able to see him in his full regalia. You can also go to bullseyetheclown.com for all of your Bullseye needs. But this was a really great conversation. What not a lot of people know is that at one point in my life, I was a party clown. I took jobs delivering balloons to people. I also did a number of other things. We're not going to get into that. In fact, let's not get into anything. This conversation is really great. And if I seem a little awkward over the course of this interview, it's because he was in full makeup the whole time. And there was something so charming and wonderful about it. I'm talking like there was full big top, backdrop, makeup, everything. We talked in character, and it was a little jarring. It was kind of like talking to Santa Claus, you know? Like when you ever see those guys in the mall that you swear if there is a real Santa Claus, it's this guy. It was that same kind of feeling. Like there was just such a great energy coming off of this dude that I just couldn't help but feel like I was 6 years old and he had, you know, pulled a rabbit out of my ear. Is that, I'm mixing my metaphors. It's not magicians. Anyway, I'm going to stop talking. I'm going to let this conversation speak for itself. It is really, really fun. And, you know, heaven knows we could really use some joy, especially right now. But I'm not getting into it. We're going to get into this. This is my conversation with the wonderful Bullseye the Clown. And in fact, I'm going to use a little bit of music that I put together, really not for any other purpose than this. I made a little piece of intro music that we're only going to use here. And now here he is, Bullseye.
Okay, I'm ready.
Bullseye the Clown, hello.
How are you?
I'm doing very well today, which is something I can be very grateful for. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing good. It's hot. Yes. That's why I'm wearing this headset. I'm wearing this headset because I have an air conditioner that's right behind me, and it makes a lot of noise, and so I have to block out the noise with the headset. So,
well, where am I talking to you from?
I think you look like you're in your house. or a studio.
So tell me about.
I live in Arizona.
Excellent. That's very, very hot.
Yes, it is.
So tell me a little bit about how a clown comes to be. Tell me about you.
Well, this clown, this is a long story, but I'll try to make it short. I actually started doing stand-up comedy, and I would travel around doing stand-up comedy, and I did that for like 10 years. And then whenever I was playing Vegas, everywhere in Vegas that I played, they tore it down. So I thought maybe that I shouldn't be doing that. And so, and then I kind of left performing for a while. And then in 2018, my dad died.
Oh.
And when my dad died, he had never traveled anywhere or gone anywhere. And so I wanted to do something kind of in his honor. And I had known about Patch Adams from watching the Patch Adams movie. And I had been watching his website for some time. And he travels all over the world and takes clowning everywhere. So in 2018, I decided to go to Russia with Patch Adams for 14 days. And 35 other clowns came along. And that was kind of my first foray into being a clown. I had no idea. I have a theater degree, so I went to college for theater. And then I did stand up, and then I just kind of had to wing the clowning part of it. And we went to hospitals, and we went to like children's hospitals and orphanages, and we went to drug rehab centers, the home for the deaf and the blind, and
you know, funny places.
Oh yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. And so then they would just take me into a room with a bunch of dying people and said, "Okay, be funny." And so you had to learn really, really quick to you know grab a chicken or something and then do something. So you had to. It was kind of like a crash course in clowning. So I had to do that very, very quickly.
Well, what does tell me what some of the misconceptions that you had to maybe change in getting into the life of a clown. What are some things that maybe you know now that you did not know when you started?
Well, I just thought it would be very easy. I'm like, oh, well, how easy could it be to make a kid laugh or to make an old lady who's dying laugh? And and I realized it was not nearly as easy as it looked. And I would watch all the other clowns, and I mean, they were nice enough that they would send like a person who had been clowning for a while with me whenever I went into a room, so I wasn't quite by myself.
Hmm.
I always thought, oh, I don't have like, you know, I can't juggle and I can't do all these things that all these other clowns are doing. And so I had to learn very, very quickly how to just use what was in the room and, you know, kind of make it something that it wasn't. So like say if I had like a little noise thing that made it sound like a telephone ringing and you would pick up their banana off the counter and hello, you know. And so it was really being in the moment. I did stand up for quite a few years and I was very well scripted. Everything that I said and everything that I did, I was very scripted, and I don't like improv. And that's why, you know, I panic whenever I do these kind of shows too, because I'm like, okay, I'm not scripted and I have to make this stuff up on the spot. So that would kind of panic me when we went. And to add on top of all of that, when we were in Russia, I don't know Russian. So I had no idea what the heck anybody was saying. And so whenever we would get on like the third floor and then we'd have to leave and you could see everybody waiting in the bus and you're trying to ask somebody, how do I get out of here? And nobody knows what you're saying. So
you have to go. You have to go more primal with it, more physical.
You do, yes. So yeah, that was kind of a crash course in physical clowning because you really just had to do like funny things, you know, like have the whoopee cushion, and so it became more of a sound and visual kind of thing. Then, of course, that became tricky too when we went to the home for the deaf and the blind. So then we had to figure out, okay, well, which ones do I have? Do I have the blind ones or the deaf ones?
Yeah.
And then you had to figure out, okay, and I think the room I went in, they were all, they could all hear, but they were all blind. So then I had to kind of hand them things and then they could touch them. And so that kind of became And then, of course, they were Russian on top of that. So,
yeah,
I couldn't exactly say anything to them or other than Hong Kong beep beep, that kind of stuff.
I imagine that would get you really deeply in touch with your empathy.
It does. And like I said, if you've read any of my stuff prior to this, you know that whenever I was younger, I was bullied and stuff. And so, but going into like these kind of things, it's like right away, you're so focused on, okay, I've got to make these people happy and I need to make them laugh and I need to do something. And so all that stuff that you might be harboring from years ago, or you can't be depressed and happy at the same time.
Yeah.
And so for that whole trip, it was just like we were just totally focused for 14 straight days on just making everybody that we saw happy. And so that became very exhausting after 14 straight days of that. We were in our costume 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We didn't get out of our costume.
Well, and as listeners to the show might not be aware, because we're just getting the audio from this, you're in full regalia now.
Oh, you betcha.
And I have to say, there is something, when you popped up on my screen, there was something very instinctual about seeing a clown that I already started to smile just the moment I saw you sitting there. There is kind of a strange shift that society has had where people are much more interested in clowns being, scary or creepy or, right, or whatever. But there is, and there always has been a place for clowning in humanity, not just in our society, but in all great societies. There have been clowns. They serve a function, a purpose. It's a really fascinating thing that you've chose to dedicate yourself to the cause of bullying. Well, not the cause of bullying, but the cause of ending bullying or dealing with bullying.
Right.
So tell me a bit about how that came to be for you. You say that you were bullied when you were young. What did that look like?
Oh, well, whenever I was young, and it was almost kind of like for a while I thought that I was invisible because, you know, you would have the kids and they would push you into lockers and stuff. And I'm like, well, maybe they're pushing me into lockers because they can't see me. But whenever I was a kid, I was really, really fat. So I knew that they could see me.
Yeah.
but they would like push me into lockers and try to pull my underwear up over my head and steal my lunch money and do all that kind of stuff. And that's something I never wanted to talk about for a long time. Like even when I did stand up, I didn't talk about any of that. I just kind of wanted to tell the jokes and be funny and not have to deal with all that. But the longer I did stand up, I did that for like 10 years. And it just wasn't, spiritually fulfilling. There wasn't anything there. There wasn't, there was just nothing exciting about making a room full of drunk people laugh.
Yeah.
You know, and then when I saw that I went to Russia and I was still kind of harboring some of this, even as an adult, I mean, because I was like, you know, well into my 40s at that time. I was still kind of harboring some of that stuff when I went to Russia. But I saw how quickly all of that disappeared when I was doing something nice for somebody else. So when I was so focused for 14, and then at the end of the 14 days when I came home, it was just kind of like, none of that mattered. None of that stuff that happened to me like a long time ago, none of that really mattered. I mean, I was harboring on to all of this stuff, and probably the people who bullied me whenever I was little, I don't even remember they did it, or they totally forgot about me by now. And so the person that I was hurting was me. And at that point, it was just none of that mattered whenever I came home. One of the things Patch did too when we were there, Patch did a movie, like a documentary on taking a bunch of Vietnam vets who had the post-traumatic stress, and it's called Clown Vets, and I don't think he's released it yet, but he let us watch it, and he took all these vets on a much longer clowning period, And of course, none of them wanted to do it at the time. They're like, oh, those we're tough and we're not doing that. Put a clown nose on and
yeah.
make kids in Somalia laugh and you know, all that kind of stuff. And it was amazing to watch them as they went through like these weeks and weeks of clowning. And then when they were all done, it was just, again, it was kind of like the same thing. They felt like almost like they were cured. They're like, we're no longer depressed like we were before. They were focused on trying to make everybody laugh and make everybody happy. And that just kind of translated and transformed their lives after having done that. And so I kind of got to thinking about that. I haven't done it yet, but I've been thinking about it'd be great to take like a bunch of either children and adults who had been bullied and never quite got over that, to take them on that type of a journey as well. Because I think it's just an amazing event.
Now, what kind of things do you teach people about bullying?
Well, I do a YouTube show, and on the YouTube show, I kind of talk about just all aspects. That's kind of what I wanted to cover because, I mean, bullying comes in so many different forms.
Yeah.
And I really want everybody to know that, especially the people who are being bullied, that it's not their fault, you know. And so one of the things I would like to cover over the course of the show is, you know, what makes a bully kind of latch onto you and what makes a bully want to bully you. And, you know, also what you can do to kind of avoid some of that and how you can also turn that around and kind of create solutions to that, you know, so kind of like creating a whole different vibe, you know, so that it's not weighing you down for 40 some years until you go to Russia and become a clown.
Well, and I have to say there is something that I can tell you this. I actually was myself. I don't think I've ever told anybody on the show this. I don't think it's ever come up. For a couple of years, right out of high school, I was a children's birthday party clown.
Oh, wow.
In Michigan. And I picked my name and I got my outfit together and I picked my makeup pattern. All of it kind of seemed like there was something about it that was almost ritualistic, that, you know, this means something. And so I did take it rather seriously, you know, thinking about, you know, do I want to be symmetrical or asymmetrical? Do I want to be neat or messy? And all of those things informed the character. And I discovered something, and I want to see if this tracks with you as well. The thing that I discovered was that there was both a shield and a great vulnerability to putting on the makeup and the nose. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. And that's exactly why whenever I do these shows, I don't want to do these shows not being the clown, because I have this whole particular persona that I have, and it's easier for me to get into the character and to really talk about the things that I want to talk about through the character as it is, as opposed to if I would just take all the makeup off and talk without the voice, without the nose, and without the makeup. And you're very right. It is very much a ritualistic thing when, you know, you sit down and you have like a method to your madness. And as you know, probably the very first time you sat down and did your makeup, what you ended up doing at the very end is not what you created at the very beginning.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, this is not the look that I had in Russia. I mean, in Russia, I had these big moose antlers. And you know what I mean? You know, so everywhere they went, that first thing they saw were these big antlers that I had on my head. And so it was a whole – and my nose was about four times too big. So I like covered half my face. So you can really – my eyes is picking up over the nose. But again, it's just like, it's almost like any job. It's you have this evolution that you go through, and
yeah.
You kind of, and honestly, I really never expected to continue doing it when I got back from Russia. I came back from Russia and I thought, okay, you know, that was a nice thing. But then there were some very, I don't know what the word is, I guess some very touching things that happened to me when I was in Russia that I felt, you know what, I can't I can't not do it whenever I come back.
Yeah.
But going into it, the thought was, okay, we'll go. We'll see what this little clowning thing does. We'll go clown in a couple hospitals and, you know, sing a couple yeehaws and honk honk. And then and then I'll come home. And then that's the end of it. But then a couple of things happened. And I was like, you know what? No, that's there's something to this thing, you know.
What would you say to someone who is experiencing a level of bullying, but doesn't think that it's going to end?
Well, the first thing I always tell everybody is just to document everything. I mean, you know, write everything down, even if it seems true, if even it's on the back of a notebook or something. Always tell somebody, but I'm a firm believer that just because you tell somebody, that doesn't mean it's going to stop.
Yeah.
Because you can't make another person care as much as you care about it. So by all means, make sure you tell somebody. But at the same time, you also need to do some things that to prevent. Well, that's what I'm looking for. You need to kind of take matters into your own hands, is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
I grew up with an alcoholic stepfather, so. One of the things I used to do is I used to do this little, it was just a little game for myself. I used to call it, keep the bully busy. And so if he would get drunk and he would come to my room and he'd pound on my door, I would lock the door and I'd open up the window, and then he would break into the door and he would see that my window was open. And then he would go outside and think that I was outside, and he would go climbing all over the mountainside, and here I was hiding in the closet. So, and so by the time that he got back, he would pass out and forget why he was even outside. He would, after about half an hour, he's like, "What am I doing out here?" You know. And so I learned very early on. One of the things I did to kind of help the bullying for me was to distract them. I would find ways to distract the bully, whether it was through something like that or. And that's kind of how I became a comedian as well. I learned how to like whip zingers at them and, you know, create punchlines. And then they were kind of like, wait a minute, what did you just say? Was that an insult? I don't know. And so they were trying to think about, what does he just tell? Did he say something? Was that bad to us? And, you know, and so that is the, but also I always tried to, I did my best to either avoid them. And if I knew I couldn't avoid them, then I would find some friends, you know, even though I had like one or two. So I would find them and then I would kind of like walk around with them. Because as you know, most bullies, they don't like to tackle more than one person. I mean, they'd rather just, you know, get you by yourself. So if you can kind of travel in a pack, and if you don't have anybody to travel with, then just tag along with somebody and kind of blend in.
It is true that there is a subset of people that when they're confronted with a bully, they'll find out how to engage with that center of their brain that is able to create laughter. That was the way that I ended up getting out of bullying when I was in school, was by being quick, by being funny. And there were actually times where that didn't serve me the way that I thought it would. Sometimes you can make a bully angry and yes, they will respond in kind. They don't appreciate being made to look a fool, but there's also kind of there's something wonderful in being able to do that, because if you're going to go down, might as well go down swinging.
That's right. That's right.
Sorry. So I didn't mean to cut you off there. So tell me a little bit more about who Bullseye is, because you've spent a lot of time with and being Bullseye. Who is Bullseye to you?
Like I said, Bullseye is definitely my alter ego. It's a way for me to kind of, it's a coping mechanism for me.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's it goes beyond that. It's, you know, I see that the, not that I'm not a charitable person otherwise, but what I have found with clowning is that clowns can do more things that normal people can't seem to do. I mean, I can get into more places maybe than I could if I was just myself and not with the makeup and the, you know, the clown. But it's an amazing and powerful thing, the clowning. I know you said you did parties, and I never wanted to go that route. I never wanted to be a clown that did parties.
I don't recommend it.
But you know, I have like hundreds and hundreds of clown friends, and that's their jobs and that's their livelihood. They do parties and they do busking on the streets, and they and it was funny. That was never my intention. I guess I'm one of those I've always been one of those people that no matter what I get myself into, I have to reinvent the wheel. I have to do something that nobody else is doing. I mean, it would just be so much easier just to follow the pack and do what they all do. So that's why I decided to do the whole bullying thing. But one of the things that happened in Russia that I talk about is I think I told you as I was being bullied, I kind of felt sometimes like I was invisible. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment where we were 35 clowns and we were all in a bus and we were heading from Moscow to Sergiev Posad. I think we were going to an orphanage up there. And we were stopped at a stoplight and there was a bus stop right over outside my window. And there was an old lady who was carrying a bag of groceries and there was like 20 people maybe at the bus stop. But you could tell just by looking at her that she really was not engaged with any of those people and those people didn't really give her a second glance. And so as I was kind of peeking out the window, I saw her and she kind of saw me and she probably looked up here and thought, what on earth is that bus of clowns? So I just started to wave at her. I was waving at her and so she kind of looked at me like really strange and she gave me a little wave and then I waved at her again and then she waved a little bit bigger. And then all the clowns on the bus kind of saw what I was doing and they all turned to look at her at the same time and they all waved at her. And so as we started to pull off, the lady sat down on a park bench and she started to cry. And I don't know what her story was, you know, why she was crying. Maybe in that particular moment, she felt that for the first time in quite some time that somebody actually saw her.
Yeah.
And so for me, that's what Bullseye is. Bullseye is the person who, I'm the clown who makes the invisible visible. That is what I do. And even when I go into a room, even what I found myself doing in Russia, we would go in and we'd be bombarded by hundreds and hundreds of kids and they'd all come running to us. You know, they're all screaming and jumping up. And I would scan the room and I would try to find that one kid who was sitting in the corner all by himself or herself and not engaged. And then I would just kind of go over there and I would slowly, you know, try to engage with them. Because I think that for me, I think part of what becomes a breakdown in society is when we kind of ignore those people who are not necessarily the most outgoing or, you know, just even look at the homeless on the street. How many people walk by the homeless on the street and don't give them a second look?
Yeah.
I mean, and I always tell everybody, you know, we're all one fire away from being out on the street. If my home caught on fire and I had nowhere else to go and had no money, I could be right there sitting beside them. So,
yeah.
You know, I always make sure that I try to walk out and, you know, at least make eye contact with them and say hello. But of course, most of the time I don't look like this whenever I'm walking down the street, but if I did, they'd probably be scared of me. They'd be like, oh, don't make eye contact with the clown.
Well, there's a great deal of there's a great deal of selflessness that comes from seeing another person and wanting to engage with them and hear what their story is and help them out of their situation. Is that something that you had to develop as a person, or do you find that it actually was kind of in there all along?
You know, I don't know. I never did that before. So I guess that was part of the, that whole transformation part of being a clown in Russia. You know, I guess I used to be, maybe it came from the bullying. I'm not exactly sure, but it was kind of like, you know, well, how does this affect me? You know, why would I bother with that? If, that's that homeless man's problem. He's on the street. That has nothing to do with me. And let me just go about my business. And, because at the same time, you know, you have that whole other dimension of what if I say something to him and then, you know, in turn, that person gets mad and he, you know, yells at me and bullies me and that kind of thing. So there was that whole, you know, struggle in my mind of, so I went through a big part of my life, even when I was doing stand up, it was just, I wanted to go out, do my show, not really engage with anybody and go home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so, when I was this clown, it was like, oh my gosh, I have to engage with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like, oh my God. Yeah. It's like everywhere we went, it was like, oh no, here comes somebody on the subway. Oh, they're going to see it. You know, it was really funny when we were going down into what was their subway. They had these huge escalators. And so it would just be funny watching everybody. They all had like their little cell phone and they were all on their cell phone going down the escalator. And then they would glance over and they would see like 35 clouds. They'd be like, what on earth is that over there? We were just like a big spectacle everywhere we went.
There's something wonderful about being able to disrupt people's, you know, natural affinity for going through the motions on things, because exactly. There's one thing you can't do when a clown is in the room. You can't ignore it.
Right. Especially if it's me, because I would look out the ones who are ignoring. And even when I did stand up, I did the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
If I was telling a joke and it had to do with something, you know, I would see people looking down at the floor. I suppose teachers have this same ability, because every time they see somebody looking at the floor, that's the person they call on.
Yeah.
You know? And so I would do the same thing. For whenever I was doing stand-up, if I saw somebody totally just sitting there and totally not engaged to what I was saying, then those are the people that I would pick on.
So tell me a little bit about your experience with how this has changed your life with regard to your mental health.
Well, like I said, the biggest thing was, I mean, I was just really stunned when I came back, and I was no longer, I mean, not that I was like a depressed person anyway, because I did stand up and I kind of had like a pretty good sense of humor.
Yeah.
But for the, you know, I guess in your own mind, you still have the stuff that weighs you down. You know, you take everything to heart and you listen to all the, you know, the stuff that everybody says about you. And when I got back, it was just, I don't know, it was just all that was gone. And it was very hard to explain. It's, it was almost as if just, that was what I was meant to do. I mean, I believe that everybody's put on a certain path.
You know, yes.
You put on a path to do a certain thing. And, and for the longest time, you know, it's like every job I had, the buildings that I was in, they would close down and become churches. And this happened like four times, like four places, like totally shut down. And I had to go and they became a church. And I'm like, oh, God is trying to tell me something. Yeah, I guess he wants me to be a preacher or something. I'm not listening. And then I did stand up and, you know, and then every casino that I performed in, they tore it down. And sorry, Riviera. Sorry, Stardust. I started doing the clowning, it was just everything just kind of tuned in. I mean, everything really since then has just really happened really, really fast, you know. I started doing the YouTube show just I've done like maybe six or seven episodes so
yeah.
far. I already picked up a sponsor. Somebody said, oh, we want to sponsor your show. And I'm like, oh, okay, you know. and then I'm going to be on the cover of a magazine next month. And I mean, so everything just all of a sudden just started clicking. And I'm like, well, maybe this is what I was supposed to be doing all this time that I just didn't clue into any of this stuff prior to this.
So what in your mind makes a clown a bullying expert?
Because I went through it. That's how, for me anyway, that's what makes this particular clown the bullying expert. I know a lot. I know a lot of clowns who, I do know a lot of clowns who were bullied when they were younger and they might even still be bullied as clowns, but, it's not something that they want to talk about. And, but the way I started to look at it was I was put through this for a particular purpose. And, one, I've never killed anybody, so I must be doing something right. And I'm still here. So I figured there must be something to this whole thing. And so I figured, and I was toying with doing the bullying campaigns and stuff before the clowning. But it just seemed like the whole clowning aspect and bringing that into the bullseye, it just all kind of seemed to work. you know, a lot of people are asking, you know, well, how on earth did you come up with your name, Bullseye? And how I actually came up with that was, you know, I kind of look at when people insult you or they call you a name, it's kind of like they're shooting arrows at you.
Yeah.
And most of this, and, you know, and I was pretty much to the point where I could just pretty much let most of those arrows fly by. But every once in a while, you would have that one little arrow that hit the bullseye. And that was kind of how, and that's kind of how I came up with that idea. I was like, that's a, you know, kind of play on words and that kind of thing. And so I just felt that, and once I started blending the bullying into the clowning, like I said, that's when everything started to kind of take off. And so I knew that I was, making some kind of headway, and that was what I was supposed to be doing with it.
Who do you think can benefit from these things? Because I've watched all of them so far, and the thing that I can say for sure is that there is an element of childlike innocence to them, and yet it is so universal that I think just about anybody could get something out of it. Was that intentional?
Believe it or not, no. And actually, the intention originally was I didn't want to do this for children. Believe it or not,
yeah.
Because I believe there's a lot of adults who were bullied as kids who never got over it.
Yeah,
and they still harbor all of that emotion, and they still harbor all of that resentment, and they're hating these people who don't even know that they hate them. You know,
so right?
And the only people that they're hurting is themselves. And so ideally the people that I was trying to reach is actually these adults. And you know, I was trying to do it in a kind of a fun, lighthearted way, but at the same time, because if you've watched some of the episodes, you know that some of them kind of get a little deep here and there.
Yeah.
And I actually had somebody talk to me the other day about the one. I think I read a story about. It was the circus story about the self-bullying, and they're like, "Oh my gosh, I do that all the time. I call myself names and I put myself down and I do all this stuff." And it wasn't actually until I was in the middle of reading that book, I thought it was going to be a book about the circus. So I thought, "Well, I'll just do this for like a little fun story on my show and kind of break up the monotony." And then I started reading, and I'm like, "Oh, this is actually a book about bullying." And then I actually learned something while I was in the middle of filming my show. So, and I still get stuff out of it, you know. And I guess that's the joy of editing too, is I can, you know, if I forget something or something comes to me in the middle of the show, I can go, "Oh, okay, when I come back to that, I'm going to edit this in because this makes a good point," and that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know, if children get stuff out of this is great too.
Yeah.
Like I said, but hopefully some adults kind of get where I'm coming from and can relate to some of this stuff.
Well, of course, and I think that's pretty obvious in the approach that you're taking, because it's not the easy sort of I don't want to say that your show is unsanitized, but it's not that sort of simple language that I'm used to hearing in regards to bullying. It seems to be coming from a much more honest, direct place, while still having that kind of gentle guidance through the topic, because the topic is very difficult, but the delivery matters so much. And so the way that you're delivering this topic is a very interesting juxtaposition to the subject matter itself.
Well, what's really interesting is I'm actually writing a book that should be hopefully out by December, called "Bullseye on Bullying: Survival Tips to Beating the Bullies." And as I'm writing it, it's not coming across the way that my show comes across. And so I'm like, okay, now I got to figure out a way to make this come across the same way in writing it.
Because
I can't write with the same inflection, you know, because who knows how you're going to read this.
Right.
And so I figure I'm just going to write the book with the way I have it written, and then I will go back in and I will clown it up a little bit, make it a little bit fluffier. But I've already gotten some criticisms about some of the things I've said on my show. And I saw
you responding to your criticism, and I particularly loved that. I actually, that was the first one I saw. And so I saw you responding without context. And I think that's what made me really fall in love with it. I sent it on to friends and I said, you got to watch this. You really got to see this. It's, it's really fascinating because it's at once something that I think would be very helpful for a lot of people, but it's also fun. It's pretty fun.
Well, like I said, I have some of, you know, and I right away in the book, I right away say, you know, this is not a one size fits all, just kind of like, you know, under one size fits all underwear does not cover all the butts in the world.
Yeah.
my advice is what works for me.
Yeah.
What I hear has worked for some other people, but it's not going to be the same stuff that you see on every single bullying website, because everyone says, just tell somebody and everything will be okay.
Yeah.
No, that's not true. And that's not true. You know? And so I don't want to give just a really simple answer like that. Just, oh, go tell somebody. And because a lot of times you tell somebody and they tell somebody and then the bully gets ticked off and then you're in a worse shape than you were before.
Yeah.
So, you know, so there's just a lot of different things at play here. And so I'm totally being totally honest. And so a lot of people don't like my honesty.
Well, it's subjective sometimes, I suppose.
It is. Yeah, well, it is, you know, just, you know, advice is a dime a dozen, you know, what works for me is not going to work for you and vice versa. And, you know, and who would have thought that, you know, becoming a clown would take away all the fear and anxiety that I had.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, if I didn't have all this stuff on, I would not be able to do this interview at all. I would be so nervous about, seriously, I'd be so nervous about this interview. I, you know, and I even put on Facebook today, I said, oh, here I go. I was all in my costume. And I said, oh, here we go. You know how much I hate to be unscripted, just wing stuff.
Yeah.
Because when I did stand up, I mean, I had a book and it was, you could pretty much watch my show night after night after night and it would be all exactly the same.
Yeah.
And there we go. Every, you know, I just wanted to make sure that I didn't screw up. And of course, you always screw up because.
Yeah.
Somebody drops their drink or somebody shouts something out. And so then it kind of disrupts me.
There was bachelorette party.
Exactly. And there were times where I told the same joke twice. And I think I caught myself in the middle. I'm like, did I just tell this joke? They're like, yes. I'm like, well, this is for the people who didn't pay attention the first time. So we're going to do it again. But I'll tell you, one of the things, I mean, if you've got the time, I don't know how much time we got them.
Yeah.
But one of the things that happened in Russia too, other than the little thing about the bus stop, was we get to one of the hospitals. This was a hospice for the elderly. And, you know, of course we get in there. Did you see the movie Patch Adams, by the way?
I have, yes.
Okay. So we get up on this, we're on this floor and they say, okay, you can go into all the rooms and you can, you know, talk to them and have fun with them and play. But you can't go into that last room down there on the right. So right away, I'm like, well, what's on the last room on the right? You don't want to go in there. I said, well, what's in there? They're like, it's an old lady. Her name is Helena. We call her Mount St. Helena. She gets really angry. She throws things. She'll cuss at you. You don't want to go in there. And I said, okay. So we go all about our business and we go into every room. And so we're all done and we're getting ready to leave. And so the other clowns are walking down towards to get on the bus. And I'm standing out there right outside that room that we're not supposed to go in. And I'm thinking, now what would Patch Adams do? He would go into this room. And so I kind of was weighing the options. I'm like, well, if she throws a bedpan at me, I can duck. If she cusses at me, I don't know Russian, so it don't matter. So I just kind of peeked in there. And I could see that she was in there. She was kind of looking at the wall. She wasn't looking my way. And so I started blowing bubbles and I walked in and the further, and I didn't say anything because you don't want to startle people, especially if they look at they see some clown with big antlers and all that kind of stuff. And so I was walking in and I just kept blowing bubbles. And eventually a couple bubbles just kind of went by her face, you know. And so she kind of looked up and she looked over my way and saw this clown standing in a room. And I kind of motioned like, you know, can I come in? And she patted her bed and told me to come over. And so she's fascinated by the bubbles. So I kept blowing the bubbles. And then I wanted her to try to blow the bubbles. And so I gave her the little bubble wand. And she booed the bubble, but she could only get like one little bubble out. It wasn't very much. And I said, no, you got to blow harder than that. And yeah, I blew, and she blew a couple more bubbles. And I said, no, you want to really get your whole breath into there. And I mean, I don't know, she probably had no idea what I was saying anyway.
Yeah.
I was speaking English. But then she leaned back and she blew, and there was bubbles all over the room, but at the same time, her teeth flew all the way out across the room. So she was laughing. She started laughing really, really loud. I mean, she had this big, big voice. And she was just laughing. I'm like, shh, we're going to get in trouble. And so I run over and I'm looking for her teeth on the other side of the room. And I find her teeth. And I'm holding her teeth up. And she's laughing. And the nurse comes in the room. What is going on here? And I'm standing there like this, you know, holding the set of false teeth. And so, you know, and since it was a hospice and this was a few years ago, I mean, I'm sure that Elena has passed on now, but you know, the way I look at it is what I did for that particular moment was it gave her one memory that you know, she'll have till she'll have that very end. So that's kind of what it's all about for me, is just kind of doing the unexpected and reaching those people that nobody wants to reach. I mean, this woman never had any visitors the whole time she was in this hospice. I don't know if her family was not in Russia or they had passed on already or what happened with her family, but they said she never had any visitors. And so, of course, they still weren't very happy with me that I went in there. I don't know if they thought I was trying to steal her teeth or what they thought, but get that American tooth thief out of here.
Well, I can't think of a better story to close on.
Yay!
Thank you so much for talking to me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was a nice change of pace.
And there you have it. Do you feel just full of life and happiness and laughter at this point? Because you should. And if you want to get some more Bullseye in your life, and I know that you do, you can go to BullseyeTheClown.com. He's also Bullseye the Clown on Instagram, Bullseye the Clown on LinkedIn. There's a Bullseye Facebook page. There's a YouTube channel, which he puts out these great, great anti-bullying videos, and they're good for people of all ages. I swear, you've got to check this out. You know what? Don't be so hard-hearted and cynical. Get yourself some joy in your life. As for this podcast, you can now find it by asking your Amazon Echo to play it for you. It's that easy. But as always, until next week, don't kill yourselves out there. Let's hear that clown song again.